Our next speaker is Dr. Marilyn Krajicek, who is a professor and director of nursing at the Colorado LEND program, which prepares interprofessional leaders in disabilities, and also she's the director, directs the Doctor of Nursing Practice, Master of Public Health, and the DNP Public Health Nursing Programs for the University of Colorado College of Nursing and Onsets Medical Campus. And also Dr. Krajicek directs the National Resource Center for Health and Safety and Child Care and Early Education. So she's going to talk about environmental health in early child care settings and some of our evidence-based standards. So another approach to
this. Thank you very much. I think much of originally I was supposed to be the first on the program, but I think it really follows as we're talking about the Child Environmental Health Network, because we are doing a project or have, and what I'll be talking about are the standards that have been selected for the project. Let's see, where are we? Okay. First of all, I want to say we have no financial relationships to disclose with the work and the presentation here at APHA. Okay, the mission, I want to talk first about the mission of the National Resource Center for Health and Safety and Child Care, which is the foundation on which we have pulled out the collections such as the environmental health standards. It's to improve the quality of out-of-home child care and early education programs and support the health and safety of the children that the programs serve. Okay, the NRC supports the efforts of national and state collaboratives, early childhood comprehension systems, state child care regulatory agencies, state and local health departments, policymakers, child care resource and referral networks, early Head Start and Head Start programs, child care providers, family, child care homes. The standards are applicable to center and family, large and family, small family home facilities. Home visitors, early educators, families, parents, guardians, child care, health consultants. Caring for our children, we are discussing the standards that were developed in the third edition, completed and published in June 2011. I also want to mention that as things evolve, we have a live website that frequently asked questions where updates on our website where things are modified and changed are updated on that website. This took 4 years, this process of revising the standards. And our groups are composed of 10 technical panels, 85 panel members, content experts from the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Public Health Association, and subject specialists. Our NRC, the National Resource Center, is a cooperative agreement with HRSA, the Maternal Child Health Bureau, and our other partners are the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Public Health Association, HRSA, the Maternal Child Health Bureau, and the University of Colorado College of Nursing. As I just mentioned, in light of the evolution of things and course technology has facilitated the growth and development and rapid change in information and knowledge that impact health and safety in child care. Our new collection, which was nicely introduced through Caring for Our Children, Environmental Health, and Early Care and Education, was a process that CEHN contacted us in light of their grant, that they were a partnership with the University of Maryland through a CDC grant, and we became partners in developing the environmental health standards that we're talking about today. And there's, of course, more work, as you mentioned, that needs to continue in terms of updating as we move forward with this whole issue. Anyhow, why focus on child's environmental health? Well, we know that children are not just little adults. They crawl on the floor, put things in their mouths, and have faster respiratory rates, and I think this is introduced by all of our previous speakers. All of their systems, nervous, reproductive, such as hormones, are growing and developing, so it is a major concern. Why focus? Every day approximately, this is pretty close to your statistics, I think, that we have a slide up here on approximately 11 million children under the age of 5 in the U.S. attend early care and education programs. Early care is defined for us as child care. and all the way up to the preschool programs, including Early Head Start and Head Start. An average of 36 hours per week is spent in the program, close to 40 hours. But you ask the Head Start providers, some of the children, some of our early in our Head Start programs open up at 6 a.m. in the morning, and those children are there till 6 o'clock at night. And the last food that some of the children may have is what they get at the, they may not have dinner when they go home after 6 o'clock at night. So you're talking about 60 hours a week that some of the children may be take care for in our facilities. The purpose, it represents the best practices determined by research or expert panel consensus that will ensure an environmentally healthy early care and education program. So therefore, the environmental health standards that we're talking about right now, it's a subset of 123 of our 638 standards and 9 appendices from caring for our children are incorporated into this this pullout document. Okay, how were they chosen? This was our partnership with the Child Environmental Healthcare Network. If the standard, this is what was agreed upon, if the standard is not followed, would the result harm be considered the result of an environmental health incident, such as a chemical or allergen exposure, noise level, we heard a little bit about noise today, which is a factor, B, a physical injury, such as a fall, and children do get hurt in child care programs, and children also die in child care, and we won't get into much of that now, but such as with sudden infant death syndrome, etc., or an infectious agent, such as a bacteria or virus. And I will get into a little bit more about what's happening in light of the importance of the environmental factors related to that. How was the collection developed? Partnership created an initial list of CFOC standards and an introduction in partnership with CEHN. Contacted our technical panel, environmental health technical panel chair and other members. And the NRC, we have a steering committee that directs us, that all of the work that we do goes through the steering committee. And those are representatives of AAP, a representative of AAP, APHA, Maternal Child Health Bureau, and us for the initial review and the final selection of the standards after the two groups met. Determined the stakeholder reviewers and requested feedback, and that came from our stakeholders as well as CEHN stakeholders. How was the collection developed? Reviewed and approved by the CFOC Steering Committee. We posted the document to the NRC website at the end of July and continuing to market this via the social media, e-resources, and what's new for August on the NRC website. We've had probably about 600 downloads up to this point in time in terms of the NRC has a very, very large website. And all of the work and any of our documents are available on our website. The CFOC document, you can actually run this all night. You can run a ream of paper to copy the documents of CFOC and the 638 standards. And I do want to interrupt here and say that we have a subset of standards of which much of this work came from. It's called Stepping Stones. Stepping Stones is comprised of 138 standards that impact mortality and morbidity in child care. And that document is used by regulatory agencies, National Association of Regulatory Agencies. We have a crosswalk checklist that when there are incidents, and one of the things I want to say that each state, we don't have enough regulators to be checking the facilities, but if there is an incident that occurs, the checklist and Stepping Stones is really the benchmark of which the regulators go in to evaluate what happened in terms of whatever the incident was. Okay. So anyhow, I also want to mention that we do have a listserv and we do have a new document out here, e-resources, that's put out twice a month, and you can contact us, send us an email at nrc.kids, or contact us. We have an 800 number, and there is a handout of this presentation that I can give you in terms of further information that we will share with you, our 1-800 number to reach us. Another thing that we do that's not posted up here is that we update the state regulations of each state child care regulations on a twice a year basis. This is a laborious process to know where the documents and where the regulations are embedded in light of, are they in education, are they in the health side, or is it a separate under the regulatory agencies at the state level? So we work closely with NARA also in light of the work that we do. How can this collection be used? Assess the early care and education environment, create an action plan to address areas of concern, and I will cite some standards that really are getting a lot of attention, and share information with parents and guardians on this whole process. Successes of the collaboration. We utilize the expertise of Eco-Healthy Child Care. You've heard this mentioned, the CEHN network and their staff access networks of both organizations to expand the reach of the collection and explore further collaboration opportunities that we hope will happen in the future. All CFOC-based collections are available on the NRC website, as I mentioned, that you could download this, because this is all of our work has been done with mostly with federal government funding, and so and it's listed under products. And there's our website also in light of and we have, when we receive a lot of phone calls, they many times are from parents that have found our network. It can be from how to start a child care center, so we refer the people back to the state in light of the requirements that are necessary to have a licensed facility. We also have to remember, child care is delivered under a category called kin care, which can be relatives provide, and they may not be licensed. And that's also a challenging group to try to work with in light of the unlicensed child care. But we really try in our networking with people to include the people in the unlicensed child care arena. We have a very, very large database that I would invite you to. We've spent a lot of time. We have the only full-time person on this project is our instructional technology person. And we are continually having to update. Remember that once something is published, it's obsolete. You see, and in light of the rapid transition with technology, you see the only way that we can currently update things is certainly on through the website. And so I wanted to alert you to that document. Okay, I want to cite, I'm not quite finished yet, but I want to cite some environmental hazards, and I picked about five standards out of our environmental, and this is what we've created in terms, you can have a pullout. Do you see, there's a process to pull out these standards, do you see, and to have a published, people still like a written document. I mean, caring for our children is sold. It's actually an APHA. It's got a bunch of them on their shelves here. And AAP, so people still are buying written documents. I served for 6 years on the publications board of the APHA. And it was in the process of about a year and a half ago was my term was up. And we know that people still want to have these written documents, even though publishers nationwide are under siege. The issues that go on with Amazon underselling the prices, if you listen to the news, there's a lot of things going on in light of what's happening with the publishers. Something else I'll tell you that's kind of aside. In our university, Barnes & Noble took over the running of our bookstore, and I guess that's nationwide. Do you see at Rutgers too? Okay. So in other words, too, you know, we still have bookstores, still people like to hold something, you know, even though it may be an electronic version or a paper version. So anyhow, we're still publishing. And I asked the marketing director, David Hartog, here at APHA, he said, no, we're still selling. When's the next edition coming out? And I just had to say, well, we don't know when that's going to happen, you see, in light of that. Okay, so the standards that I'd really like to just make some, they're pertinent now. And I'll just list them. Standard 1.4.53, this is how, if any of you have, how many of you are familiar with CFOC? Okay, some of you are, okay, would encourage you, there's rationale in terms of why and the background information and the research, And as I mentioned earlier, that if there's, as the field has grown, we know there are research studies going on in several of these areas, or else decisions are made by a consensus in light of arriving at a decision. Standard 1.4.5.3, training on occupational risks related to handling body fluids. This is huge now. As you know, with the Ebola issues, and what in terms of this relates to protection in light of, well, we are not going in with masks and gowns and spacesuits, you see, in light of it, but it's pertinent in light of the whole issue, and I will touch on hand washing and sanitizing and disinfectant. Those are huge issues in child care, and I want to talk a little bit about Clorox, because we spend a lot of time on the phone with states in the use of the Clorox products, and we know that environmental groups are developing some materials, but we don't. The research hasn't been done on the effectiveness of it. So one of the things that's happened is that the Clorox bottles have shrunk. Okay, just like your laundry soap bottles have shrunk, it's more concentrated. One of the problems and the challenges that we face is you cannot just pick up the Clorox bottle, pour it into how you're going to dilute it, just off the top of your head without looking at the EPA standards that are listed on those bottles. And this is hugely controversial because some states are developing recipes, but the changing, where is the Clorox purchase? Does it come from China? Does it come from wherever? You can go into the dollar store, you look at that, or you look at a Procter & Gamble or whoever manufactures the Clorox product. Do you see in light of it? We know it's one of the cheapest agents that's used, but the inappropriateness of one of our challenges is how to train the providers that you have to, first of all, read that bottle and you have to follow the directions. Because as we heard, a lot of times the cleaning that goes on in these environments occurs when the children are sleeping. Good intent, but wrong process to go through. And the sanitizing of the toys and the various other things that need to be done. You know, I just want to really say child care is hard work. This is not easy work. This is labor intensive of what we're expecting of providers in light of caring for our children. And we know how much time that they spend in it, in the facilities. So it's huge, and I think about every other week there's a call. We have two other part-time people that some work from home. One works from home, and another one works. She ran a program, Healthy Child Care Colorado, and is also a consultant. And I consider these two very much expert in light of what's where the standards are and the development of the standards. But they're on conference calls as the states are developing the formula that has to go through a process of, like through the, for us it would be the Colorado, if we were developing it, a formula through the state health department. In light of it, you're working with the people in the chemistry area, the laboratory, what have you. So we cannot put recipes in caring for our children. We really need to direct the guidelines to read the bottle in terms of the dilution process and follow that process rather than just pouring it out in light of the problems that it's causing and the respiratory problems. Number one, it can be asthma, it can lead to asthma and all kinds of issues related to that. So that's one thing that is huge on our agenda to spend time with. On the use and the hand washing, I want to talk a little bit about hand washing. Okay, time is coming to a close on this. We, in our standards, support the use of sanitizers, hand sanitizers. However, when that was, and that was with partnership with people from CDC, in light of Infectious Control Division, we work with several divisions in the CDC network in light of developing these standards. And recently, I'd say 3-4 months ago, I received a call from a Dr. Ann Bowden, who's an infectious disease specialist and director of waterborne diseases at CDC. Her request of us was that she is concerned that, number one, we have the hand sanitizers. Remember, one of the key players was when we put in the hand sanitizers, but those are different products also. They come from China. They come from all over. What's in them? Is it alcohol-based? What is it? Is it some other kind of just straight with whatever the product is? Her concern was that she feels that now with the infectious diseases that we're dealing with, that the hand sanitizers are not as effective. And what is effective is the friction that occurs from soap and water. And the process, we have processes of training people how to wash their hands. Okay? So that's real. So anyhow, her goal is to put out posters, develop posters, put them in child care centers, families, all over, the posters, in other words. But she said, I will take out the sanitizers. So this is where we are now. Sanitizers are expensive for programs to purchase those, but they are, it's still, we're not saying it's not that yet, totally, but I think further work needs to be done. But the strength, and as we've heard about the infectious diseases that we're dealing with, that is a challenge. So one of the things, right now she's dealing with Ebola, and she wants us to develop an agreement that they can publish those posters and print them off the website. So we're in the process of doing that, and I think I found somebody that might help in light of developing those here at APHA in partnership with our entities as well as with CDC. So that's a late agenda, right now an agenda that we're struggling with. And the next one I want to say is the use of tobacco, which was talked about, secondhand smoke, alcohol, and illegal drugs. Okay, great. Okay, good. So let me just finish. We have marijuana in Colorado, which is a huge challenge. It's legal, but there are many issues. We could even have a separate talk about what's happening, but the black market has entered it, and we're struggling with that. So I will end my session with that and have 5 minutes to really talk about that. But anyhow, I will end it with that. But they were covered, I think, your talk as well as our talk from CEHN. Do you see in light of it that we are really on the same path in terms of dealing with these issues? Okay. All right.
That's a great question. I think all of us wish we had a simple answer for you. I think the goal of presenting the range of potential issues is because it sort of helped me answer, at least start answering your question. Depending on where you are, there are going to be different issues to address. In the EPA Region 2 project I alluded to in 10 seconds that our four students helped do field visits, the issues in Staten Island and a certain urban area of New Jersey were really related to the need for IPM because of poor sanitation in the food storage and cooking areas, and then some issues with the maintenance of the physical structure because of old buildings. But if you're in other parts of the country and you have maybe I'll segue to NSAID, maybe you can talk about Maryland, D.C., it's probably other issues because it's just different,
Yeah, I think that's a good point, but also being very, our programs are for all children, but being very intentional you know where your hotspots are in your cities in particular. You might have variants happening in certain neighborhoods, but in D.C., we just know southeast of the Anacostia River is still very much dealing with every societal ill you can think of in a condensed way. I mean, we have issues all over D.C. and Maryland, Virginia, clearly. But so even though it was harder for our grad students to get to. There's one metro stop for like 5-8 miles. We had to spend more money on taxis. Some taxis wouldn't go into some of the. I mean, those are just some of the things we had to get over. We had to go in partners because, unfortunately, these are just high crime areas. Unfortunately, on top of everything else. But we were very intentional about making sure that a good, when we did some of our pilot work in D.C. that led into the national program, and this happens all over in different parts of the nation too, that we specifically had a lot of our centers from wards 6, 7, and 8. Because we just know that those are the wards that need us a great amount for many reasons. And we know that they're not necessarily targeted in other ways. They're missed a lot when it comes to other forms of intervention, environmental health as a whole. So that's just one, I wouldn't say easier way, but just in how you're thinking about your target area and being very intentional about the known factors that, you know, the known criteria that help to identify high-risk communities.
You know, the other thing I'd add, just having been, I'm on the other side where I've had to talk with Asa about what he did in California, is they compared, Ente showed you the references, which I encourage you all to look at, but they had an area near an agricultural region and an area in let's say a more suburban area. So they were already within that small group they had comparing, lower income agricultural communities versus, let's just say, a range of socioeconomic status in a suburban area. So that might be a set of references for you to look at just to get a sense. And there's very little literature, but that might be one that you could look to get that comparison.
I was just
going to add, you brought up an interesting comment with the new globally harmonized system of chemical labeling in our U.S. HAZCOM standard needing to meet that. Within the next couple of years, the comments our colleagues made about the cleaning products mean that the labels on the boxes that take them to the stores and then the actual container labels and then any dilutions that are used in a, say, like a child care center setting that's part of a bigger entity, they're going to have to not only have the proper labels, they're going to have to be followed, and they're going to be the same labels if you were in Canada, the U.S., going over the EU, or wherever. So I think all of us, hopefully that will make a big difference and just add on to the good work that you heard my two colleagues present, because then it's really not going to matter where you are. You have, for the at least the cleaning products and anything with chemicals, there is going to be a standardization in place that will be enforceable in the U.S. as well as everywhere else that's already adopted it. So, I wanted to add that after your comment about the global reach, because I think in what I do day-to-day with schools, that's a key component to drive home with teachers and the custodial and maintenance staff. Is you got to learn how to do that, because it's enforceable, and it's already the top-cited hazard or top-cited violation of standards now, let alone what's going to happen once it's enforceable.
Thank you.